fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. The Jays stumble against the White Sox.
Line to left center field. That's a base hit. That's going to bring home two runs on that one swing. And Flowers makes it 4-0 Chicago.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
8:03, good morning. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. It's Brady and Walker getting you set for Free Agent Frenzy, which is going to hit tomorrow. We'll be on the air from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Elliot Friedman will join us at 8:22 this morning. Also, quick reminder, Sportsnet 590 The Fan has a special announcement today during Hockey Central at noon. Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, Doug McClain will be joined by special in-studio guest Don Cherry at noon. To give the details, big announcement right here, Sportsnet 590. More on the Leafs weekend still to come, Greg. We will open this up for some calls, 416-870-0590, star 590. Did you like the draft pick of William Nylander? And also, the Polak for Gunnarsson trade. What does it mean going forward for the Leafs' blue line? But first, the Blue Jays' bats, they go silent again yesterday, a 4-0 loss to the Chicago White Sox. You got to be happy with the pitching in this series, but what about the bats, especially against lefties? The White Sox went lefty, lefty, lefty Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and the Blue Jays had no answer.
No, and not many teams are going to be able to do that. We talked about the softness of the division before. It's amazing the Jays had the weekend they just had, and it feels like it didn't cost them. All it really did over the last 48 hours was Boston gained two games on them. I mean, and got themselves a little more back into the race because the Rays lost both games to the Baltimore lost both games to the Rays. The Yankees lost their games to Boston, and they're still under 500 at home this year. It's embarrassing. But the Red Sox got themselves back in. You got four teams within six games. The lineup's a big issue. The sooner you get Jose Bautista back, and he did pinch hit yesterday, the better. And I'm of two minds about the pinch hit. One, you're in a game where it's out of control, and maybe it's so it's just for him to test how he feels. But
what yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday.
No, he comes up when it was 2-0. There's two runners on.
Yeah,
it's not out of control.
No. I'm saying the opposite. You could have used him in a case where you just brought him up, and it's 4-0 in the ninth inning, and then you're not all you're doing is risking him getting injured again. But they didn't play him in the field. They utilized him in a spot where he could make a difference.
If he would have got on base, they would have pinch run
for
him.
Yeah, absolutely. They're pinch running for him, and maybe they even are tomorrow if it's a critical time. But it's. Yeah, there's a lot of concern.
Disappointment? Disappointment or concern?
It's a very disappointing weekend. The concern stems from, does it not stem more from the lineup than the starting pitching? That the lineup, even when Bautista's back and even when Brett Laurie's back, and again, all we're saying is this team has to stay healthy all year. Their lineup has to stay healthy all year, or they're going to lose games like this and series like this. They've won one of their last seven series. And the starting pitching hasn't fallen off a cliff. It hasn't been disastrous. When a guy has a bad start like Jay Happ does, he comes back. Next thing you know, he's thrown seven shutout innings. Maybe he does tomorrow as well.
We've had this conversation of different sorts for months now, and you do realize there's a big difference between disappointment and frustration and then concern. I'm still in the mindset of disappointed. At this series, yeah, you lost 3 of 4 to the White Sox. But it's not like, I mean, that lineup, Saturday, Sunday, it was pretty embarrassing. You had lefties on the hill. You have Bautista's hurt. You gave Melky a day off. Lurie's hurt. Lynn can't hit lefties. Rasmus can't hit lefties.
Navarro's your cleanup hitter.
Right.
Brad Glenn's batting fifth.
But it's not like this is it. This is the lineup going forward. It's sink or swim in the AL East with this group. Of course, that's not the case. This was kind of a random weekend that was wasted because a couple of guys got hurt, and the White Sox, like you said, are one of the few teams in all of baseball that in any given series can go, here's three lefties, three pretty decent lefties, including Chris Sale, in 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
The concern for this team comes when the pitching doesn't get it done. And Jay Happ went 7-2-3 scoreless. R.A. Dickey gives up 5 runs in 7. That was the lone bad start of the weekend, if you want to call it that. Stroman was unbelievable Saturday, should have won. Burley was unbelievable yesterday, two runs over eight.
And no matter what you do with your starting pitching, do your bats feel overwhelmed? If I said to you, and this sounds great anyway, you're in an ALDS against the LA Angels of Anaheim, and so the righties you'd face probably are Jared Weaver and Garrett Richards, but you're facing Tyler Skaggs and CJ Wilson, and you have... It feels like when they face a left-handed pitcher, they have a really limited chance to win. So you're almost always, I don't know how to rectify that within the lineup. Is it go more righty-based? Do they rely too much on Francisco and Rasmus and to some extent Ghost when he does play and Lind? Do they rely too much on four big-time left-handed hitters who you don't want to see out there against a lefty almost in any circumstance? Rasmus is the best of a bad bunch, yeah. And he's a .215 lifetime hitter against lefties.
I mean, you're committed to the idea of a left-handed hitter playing center field. Rasmus and Ghost are both lefties. You're playing one or the other, and both are good defensively. So you take your knocks there. The biggest example of what you're talking about is Adam Lind. He's one of the keys to this entire lineup. In a lot of ways, he kind of makes him go. He's that left-handed bat right in the middle. He hits .375 against righties, but he can't hit lefties. Yeah. It's really tricky for John Gibbons. Really tricky.
Let's transition this to Maple Leafs. We'll talk to Elliot Friedman coming up at 8:20. The Leafs with, I guess you could make the argument, three bits of news on the weekend. One, drafting William Nylander at eighth overall. The other is trading Carl Gunnarsson plus the 96th pick in the draft for Roman Polak. And absorbing another couple hundred grand of money. It evens out the money between the two. And the third is James Reimer asking for a trade. There's no semblance that he's not going to get any kind of qualifying offer. It'd be smart economics for the Leafs to qualify him, as they did with Nazem Kadri. So you don't have a guy sitting there as an RFA and potentially sitting there and not being able to move him. 416-870-0590, *590. Assess the Maple Leafs weekend. Maybe you think it's good news on Nylander. Maybe you didn't like the trade, and maybe you don't like that Reimer wants out. Although we've been saying for months on this show, most people have, that inevitably James Reimer had played his last game as a Maple Leafs goaltender in the last weekend of the season. Drew in Brampton, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, with Brady and Walker at 8:10. Go ahead, Drew.
Morning, boys. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. I like the Nylander draft. I just hope that management can be smart enough not to rush him and succumb to pressure like we did with Kadri. Let him develop, and let's see where he goes.
Kadri's developed fine.
Yeah, but how many times was everyone wanting to see him up, saying, oh, okay, he's ready, and then we basically, management basically, they won't admit to it, but they caved into the pressure, saying, okay, let's give this kid a chance, because that's basically what happened.
Yeah, there's some element of that. I don't know what the rush factor is going to be like, Andrew, on Nylander, and some of it's going to relate to how he looks in training camp. I don't think there's any huge... They've got depth on the wings that a lot of other teams don't have. So there's not a lot of sense of urgency to put him in a top six position on the wing unless they are moving another body out in the next few days.
Yeah, I've always said you can bring a guy up too early, but there's no such thing as bringing him along too slowly. You've never heard a player for leaving him in a lesser league for another year. I've never heard of an instance like that. I like the fact that Nylander has some options. I like that he can play in the American League next year and play with the Marlies. You're in the same city. Yeah. Lots of eyes on you. So it's tough not to like the pick. Your drafting skill, we'll see what he is. I mean, I haven't watched him extensively. Nobody has.
No, if you're even like me, you're saying, even about Peter Holland, there's your example. Peter Holland, you might want to see more of him. You might want him to play more. Why is Jared Smithson playing instead of him? Why is Trevor Smith playing instead of him? And yet at the same time, his time with the Marlies and even going on a playoff run, yeah, there's no damage that's being done there. He's still got, if anything, a better chance to be a more productive NHLer next year.
Coming up in a couple of minutes, we have a bonus set of Jay's Brewers tickets to give away. Jay's ticket window brought to you by the Great Blue Heron Charity Casino. This Polak for Gunnarsson deal, what does that mean going forward, and especially tomorrow with the Leafs blue line?
To me, it makes it seem like they're going to be more active in seeking out a free agent defenseman. They haven't gone free agent defenseman shopping. Doesn't feel like in a long, long time the Maple Leafs haven't. They've either got them through trade, like Jake Gardner. They've flipped Lyles for Gleason.
Komisarek was really the last guy.
Komisarek and Beauchemin were the same. Yeah, same year in the summer of 2009. But they haven't dove into those waters in a long time. But it tells me they are. because, as you've said, there's no ideal player for Dion Phaneuf to play with next year, and I'm still believing Dion Phaneuf is on this team next year.
You know what I really like about the Polak for Gunnarsson deal is that, to me, they're both 4-5-6 type of guys, and they're making, you know, a shade under $3 million. What I really like about this is that there was no partner for Dion Phaneuf 6 months ago. We all agreed with that. Carl Gunnarsson played there, but he wasn't the perfect fit because he was playing out of his element a little bit. We know that Roman Polak is not going to be playing 25 minutes a night with Dion Phaneuf. This was the built-in excuse for the Leafs management team and Leafs coaching staff. Boy, you guys don't have a partner for Phaneuf. Yes, we do. It's Gunnarsson. Gunnarsson should have been playing 5-6. Polak will be playing anywhere from 4-5 or 6. And now the onus is on this team. You need to get him a partner, and you don't have it.
And you're going to limit some of what Phaneuf does. You're going to limit his minutes. You're going to limit some of his special teams time. Alan in Mississauga at 8:14. Got to go quickly, Alan, but go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Just to extend the discussion about another defenseman, I like this Ehrhoff that the Sabres bought out. Is he not a number two defenseman?
Yes,
for sure he is.
Because,
yes,
because he would be ideal in a blue and white jersey. Everybody says, strength up the middle, strength up the middle, and you go from the goalie out. So I believe a defenseman is much more important to get right away than, say, a centerman.
Yeah, depends on the centerman, but they're spending a lot of money on their forwards, and you got to be practical about who you can get. And Christian Ehrhoff would be about the best shopping they could do tomorrow, yeah, if that's where they're going to go. But I think 9 other teams feel that way.
Oh,
about
sure.
Ehrhoff.
There's going to be 10 or 12 teams making Christian Ehrhoff an offer, no doubt about it. But if you are a Leafs fan and you're making your wish list, your Christmas wish list today,
yeah,
Christian Ehrhoff has to be ranked number one.
And there's every chance he's got a higher cap hit after being bought out than he did before. And that would be a first among NHL players. Got more tickets for you. Blue Jays and Brewers Wednesday, courtesy of Great Blue Hair and Charity Casino. Name the two Blue Jay players to wear number 66 with the team. One's a former player, one's a current player. Slam dunk for you the day before July 1st. We're giving it away. 416-870-0590, *590. Name those two Blue Jays players who wear number 66 or have worn number 66. And you're off to see the Jays and Brewers and Ryan Braun on Wednesday. Elliot Friedman next, 23 currently, 29 the high today. Don't forget Don Cherry in studio at noon with a special announcement on Hockey Central at noon this afternoon, right after Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. It's Brady and Walker.
Back at it. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're getting a guy in the prime of his career who, when at the top of his game, you know, he's won the Selke. He can play against any forward line that you put him on against and still produce.
Are we Ducks or what?
That is Anaheim Ducks coach Bruce Boudreau. That was from Saturday night. Yeah, the Ducks do pretty well. They take Nick Ritchie at 10 in the draft. They use the Ottawa Senators pick to do it. And then they go out and trade Magic Beans for Ryan Kessler. Nice little piece.
Magic Beans had a good first season, though.
I don't know why they called him that.
He was very good.
And therein lies the debate, right? It's Brady and Walker, 8:24. I'm Andrew Walker. He's Greg Brady. Elliot Friedman going to join us in a few seconds, and lots to get to with Elliot. Ryan Kessler presented the Vancouver Canucks and Jim Benning with a very difficult task. It's trade me or keep me, but I'll be sour, but trade me. And you have two options to trade me. One, to a team that's going to kick your ass up and down the division for the next 5 years. Or the other, trade me to arguably your biggest rival. What is Jim Benning supposed to do with that?
Tell your player to come to camp next season. He's under contract. Does he have the courage to hold out? So you got the balls to not come in and risk him another month of paychecks? Not likely.
But have we not learned what happens in Vancouver when you let a trade me situation sit there and linger and fester? That was as bad as it could get with Roberto Luongo.
But I think, juxtapose that with what's going on in Ottawa. So all over the weekend, Brian Murray decides to let the cat out of the bag, which he's done with Danny Heatley. Look at last summer with Daniel Alfredson, how he recounted, well, I got back to my cottage at 5 o'clock and Daniel Alfredson texted me at 5:08. Then I called him back at 5:11. I mean, he did everything he could to put the onus on the player and basically say, we tried to do what was fair by the player, and the player screwed us. And he's doing it again with Jason Spezza. So one team, there's 10 teams that Spezza wants to refuse to go to, and one of them is Nashville. And that's fine. He knows this already. He works out a deal with Nashville. He gets a deal done with a team that he knows Spezza won't report to. First of all, why do that? Then why make it public and make Jason Spezza look like he's, you know, a diaper baby, big diaper baby, not wanting to go play in Tennessee? It's his right to not want to go play in Tennessee. You can admit that.
Because that was the best deal available to
that's
Brian
not,
Murray.
That's here's not where Jason Spezza's problem, Andrew. It's here, not his problem.
Here's where I have a problem with it. The no trade clause is there so you don't get blindsided by a trade if you're a player. If case in point, Jeff Carter signs the big deal with Philly. The no trade doesn't kick in for a couple of years. And then he wakes up one day, you've been traded to Columbus. You didn't ask for it. You didn't expect it, but here you go. I felt a little bad for Jeff Carter in that situation because you have no control over anything. But Jason Spezza, this is why you have a no trade. So it's you don't get blindsided. But when you ask, and in fact demand to be moved out, when you say, I'm done here, I want to go elsewhere, you have to, you waive that no trade.
No, you do.
That's how it should be.
That's
if you demand out of a market, guess what? You're going to wherever we get the best deal
for
you.
I hope you run a business someday. Severance pay, never heard of it. Get out. You can't do it that way. You earn something.
But he's getting his full freight. He has 1 year left in his deal.
So you'd report to all 30 NHL markets and be like, cool, I'm going there. No, you wouldn't. Everybody's got personal preferences.
If you want so bad to be out of your current situation, yep, I would report to the other 29. Yeah. Absolutely. That's me, and it's just an opinion.
I hope you don't feel as bad for Brian Murray as you do Jeff Carter, because he doesn't deserve any sympathy. And this is the third superstar.
I'm not sympathetic for Jeff Carter.
I'm not sympathetic for Jeff Carter now
because he pouted his way out of Columbus.
Elliot Friedman joining us. He'll be part of Sportsnet's big free agent extravaganza tomorrow. Signing season starts at 11 a.m. on all the Sportsnet flat platforms. What do you make of this? I mean, we're coming in on Brian Murray, but why negotiate? Why would he negotiate a deal with the Predators, get a deal done, release it to the public, knowing full well, and if he didn't, he's not doing his due diligence, his star player's not going to report there. He won't accept the trade there.
Well, I think that's... excuse me, guys. I'm sorry I'm getting over a bit of a cold, but I think that's all PR. Like, to me, that's what that is. You know, you have a player who wants to leave, and I think what the Ottawa Senators are simply doing are covering themselves a little bit and saying, look, we're trying. You know, to me, Ottawa went into the draft knowing that this was going to be a very hard trade to make. For one thing, I understand the offers, you know, weren't as good as they were hoping. I think one of the reasons is that Spets only has 1 year remaining on his contract. And secondly, I think they knew they were pretty limited on some of the places they could go. To me, really, guys, no trades have almost become not worth the paper they're printed on. You look at Scott Hartnell, he had a no trade, and Philadelphia called him up and said, we've got a deal for you to Columbus, and by the way, you're done here. And, you know, Columbus did the prep, did the work on Scott Hartnell. Jody Shelley called him, and he said, okay, I'll go there. Now, Spets is playing a little harder, and I don't really have a problem with that, but I will say, in this business, if teams want to make life uncomfortable for someone, even if they have a no-trade clause, they're going to.
That's the trend it seems to be going now, and guys picking their destination, like Marty St. Louis. But you'd remember, Elliot, 6 years ago, three or four or five Maple Leafs, the team said, how about we're not sure we... And they said, too bad, we're staying. And that obviously didn't sit well with Leaf fans, yet they earned the... Matt Sundin, Darcy Tucker, those guys earned the right to stay. They earned it in their contracts.
Well, the place, Greg, where I'm particularly sympathetic are to guys who take less money in exchange for the no trade. That is a situation where Kelly Rudy, who Andrew used to work with all the time in Calgary, he believes if you sign a no trade, you shouldn't even be allowed to be asked to waive it.
Yeah.
And like a guy like Ryan Kesler, one of the reasons that Kesler took such a hard line with Vancouver in a trade is that when he signed, he took less money to stay in Vancouver. They were a top contender then, and they said, look, Ryan, we want to keep the band together. Will you take less cash? And he said, yes, I will. And what happened was he took the no trade and left money on the table. And now when they wanted to trade him, he really took a hard line with them, and they got boxed into a corner and had no choice. It's sort of like a game of poker. Like, how big, how good is your hand, how big are your cojones? If you're really going to fight, you do put the team into a tough spot.
Elliot Friedman, our guest on Brady and Walker. You make a good point on Kessler, Elliot, but there has to be some sort of limit here. Like, don't you feel awful for Jim Benning? So there's Kessler who wants out. He's not going to go to a Canadian team. He's not going to go to an Eastern Conference team. So he gives you two options. It's trade me to your biggest rival or the team that's going to, I'm going to pound you for the next 5 years in Anaheim. That's not fair either.
Well, I mean, you agree. Maybe it's a previous administration, but you agreed to a deal. A player agreed to a contract, and like Andrew, if there was a new employer of the fan tomorrow, if it was sold and you had something in your deal, they would have to live with it. Like, I think the one thing that everybody kind of forgets here is, would you do anything different in your own life? Sometimes we hold people to different standards than we would hold ourselves. And, you know, if I was in that situation and the team really, and an employer didn't really want me anymore, I might, it depends on how I felt about where I could go. You know, I've played a hard line before in my own contract negotiations at times. I've taken an easy line in my contract negotiations at times. I kind of look at it like, would I do anything different than the person in question? And if I was Kessler, I may not. And I think what it comes down to in his case in particular was he left money on the table, and probably a significant amount of money on the table in exchange for that no-trade clause. And I think if you're a player who did that, then I think you have a different situation than a lot of other people.
I need to address this. We just finished talking about the Leafs' need for someone to play in that top pairing alongside Dion Phaneuf. Could it be Christian Ehrhoff? Well, the latest rumor this morning, reports say the Leafs are asking Josh Georges to waive a no-trade clause for him to come to Toronto. 4 years left in a deal that pays him upwards of, I want to say, $3.5 to $4 million. Your thoughts on this possibility?
Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, he's, you know, in a lot of ways, he's P.K. Subban's defensive conscience and partner at a time. You know, I think it's a good pairing for Montreal. I'm interested and curious to know exactly why they're considering breaking it up. I wonder if it's for cap reasons. Montreal and Markov went back and forth for about 5 months until that deal got done, which says to me that Montreal was really considering all of its options and maybe a way not to do it. They do have to sign Subban. They have some other contract issues coming up. They're going to have to deal with guys like Gallagher and Galchenyuk in a year. So they're probably looking at this like, we're going to have to clear some room. I really like Georges as a player. You know, maybe he doesn't put up the most offensive numbers around, but he does compete hard. He does play big minutes. You know, when they've had a couple of their runs in recent playoff years, he's taken a pretty prominent role. I could see why the Maple Leafs would be interested. I'm searching for a bit more information on his willingness to do this, but it's not exactly a secret that the Maple Leafs have made a couple of pitches for him in the last couple of years. And, you know, the thing is, Dion likes to play the right side, even though he's a left-hand shot. Georges is a guy who plays the left side. He's a left-hand shot. So maybe they're looking for a fit there, too. I'd have to see exactly what they're thinking in terms of his usage.
As importantly, what number would Nazem Kadri wear in Montreal? Would he stay with 43, or would he... You think he'd... Is that a fit?
I'm not sure he's what they'd be looking for, because one of their biggest concerns is their centers are already too small as it is.
He kind of lowers the mean and the median in terms of height and average. But it'd make his dad happy. Very happy. Happier.
Why, is it, you know why? The big Canadiens fan?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, it was all Canadians all the time in the Kadri household. So
yes, I've heard the... I'm not so sure. Like, the one thing about Toronto, and this is what I heard about the Maple Leafs when they were in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
They were always
they would prefer to do age for age. If they were trading a young player, they would prefer to get a player in the same age group. The only difference I heard to that was that if they could get a player with term who could help them. And obviously, as you mentioned, Georges has term. He just signed a six-year deal a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I'm still not 100% convinced it's Kadri going in this deal, but I know that they did say if they were going to go a little bit older, it was going to be for somebody with term in that position.
Well, we'll be following along tomorrow, Elliot. We're on from 8 to 11. Maybe we'll catch up with you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Yeah, hopefully my voice will be back.
All right, that is Elliot Friedman, our new Rogers insider here on Brady and Walker. Good stuff, by the way. Congratulations to Matt in Toronto.
Hey, everybody, we're all going to get late.
Just like that.
Courtesy of
the morning.
Great Blue Heron Charity Casino. You are going to see the Brewers and the Jays coming up this week as well. On Wednesday, he knew the answer to our trivia question. Blue Jays ticket window opens up every morning at 7:14.
All right, the Jeff Blair Show comes your way at 9. We'll prep you for that. And Jason Kidd, a lot of people are banging him hard. He's done some things wrong this weekend, but there's one really good point that he's got in all this in his favor. We'll tell you what it is.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Now, more Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
8:44, good morning. Brady and Walker continues on your Monday. Tell you what, no matter how busy or crazy, the Pride Parade was here too on the weekend. As crazy as your weekend was, it wasn't nearly as crazy as Jason Kidd's.
Who wasn't in the Pride Parade or in Toronto this weekend.
No, but it was
neither.
Busy none the same with the Brooklyn Nets. We'll tell you all about it in a few minutes. By the way, we are on tomorrow to get you set for Free Agent Frenzy, Brady and Walker, a special edition from 8 to 11. And, of course, everything is open for business at noon tomorrow. Will Josh Georges be a member of the Maple Leafs before that time?
Should he be? I'll ask you, should he be a desirable player for the Leafs? I don't see this. He'll help you on the PK, brings nothing offensively. 30 years old, how many defensemen are better after the age of 30 than before the age of 30 that aren't headed to the Hall of Fame and already don't have a big track record? I'm not.
Well, I'd make the argument.
And then you got to give up something off your roster to get him.
I'd make the argument that 29 to 32 is kind of that's your prime for a defenseman. And
maybe for a defensive one.
And Josh Georges, the last thing you should be thinking about adding defensively is offensive guys. Dion Phaneuf can play. Morgan Rielly, Jake Gardner is going to put up their points.
I'm sorry, Gardner. Yeah.
If anything, I continue to be of the belief that they're going to move off of Cody Franson and trade him somewhere out west.
Tell me somebody that comes off the Leafs roster that goes to Montreal in a Josh Georges deal, and you go, great trade, Dave Nonis. You really put the boots to Mark Bergevin on that one.
Well, first,
that's the tough
first
part.
Is who is Montreal looking at? Do I love a Nazem Kadri for Josh Georges trade? If the second part of this...
I was hoping you'd say no right away.
Well, if the second part of this, if the Leafs add a centerman via free agency, like if they're signing Paul Stastny, yeah, I would trade Kadri for Georges. Right?
Right.
But every move has to come with a secondary move here.
But this is why trade for Josh Georges if you can sign totally different defensemen. Someone's going to sign Dan Boyle tomorrow. Dan Boyle will be one of the first players signed probably in the first hour and a half of signing season tomorrow.
And the Leafs have said they have interest in that name,
and
too.
And if they've got an offer in on Dan Boyle and you sign him, and I go, George is a lot different player, but you're probably signing Boyle for in the neighborhood of $4.5 to $5. It's a $10 million, two-year deal. What would you figure Boyle gets? For 2 years.
I would like
11
him.
At the most.
I would like him at 2 years, $10 million.
Yeah.
That's what you'd like him at.
So you're not going to bring Georges in on a 3.9 cap hit, and you've already got, and then you bring Boyle in on a 5 cap hit, and you just brought Pollock and Gunnarsson's money interchanges each other.
But Franson to be on his way out. You can't criticize Georges for being 30 when Boyle's sitting there at 36.
It's a lot different skill set, and it's a guy that plays on your first power play unit, and he becomes your power play quarterback. And lets Dion Phaneuf do other things. It doesn't mean Dion Phaneuf can't still play power play. I don't see the fit for Georges. Now, you might say, Brady, did you watch them? They're bad defensively. Why wouldn't you want another good defensive defenseman? Because you're giving something up right now. That's why.
Josh George has played so well with PK Subban. Why couldn't he be the guy to play with Dion Phaneuf? We've sat here and talked for months about the Leafs needing a partner for Dion Phaneuf.
Yes.
Why couldn't it be 30-year-old Josh George?
I just don't see a guy. I feel like there's no perfect fit in terms of what you'd give back on the roster. Hate the idea of giving up a guy 7 years younger in Kadri.
What if it's Lupul? What if it's Joffrey?
Yeah, I wondered about that because Lupul's got 3 years of contract. He's got 4 years of contract left at 5.25. So it's the identical amount of term, and it's another $1.5 million more, but Lupul's worth it compared to George's. I'm not running down Josh George's. He's got value in the league, but I don't know if I'm Montreal. I'm sure not sure I'm getting more than 50, 55 games out of Lupul. Every single year, there's always something that takes him out of the lineup for a bunch of games at a time.
Yeah, and what are you going to say? Josh George's is a name that, yeah, I'd definitely be interested, and I'd be interested in Josh George's if I'm another team as well, not just the Maple Leafs. Yeah. But every deal, of course, is contingent on what you're giving up.
And Montreal,
we have yet to know that.
And Montreal-Toronto trades are incredibly rare. Gord Stelic will join Jeff at 9 o'clock. Gord Ash on at 9:40, we'll talk more about it. So over the weekend, NBA coaching news, NBA free agency is going to ratchet up as well. And we mentioned Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, Udonis Haslem. They all opted out of their Miami Heat deals. That became the big story in the offseason so far. Second biggest might be Jason Kidd. And to compliment him, you'd call it bold to say what it really is. There's some douchebaggery here on a professional and maybe even personal level for Jason Kidd. No shock on the latter part. But the Milwaukee Bucks are in negotiations with the Brooklyn Nets to get Jason Kidd as their head coach. You say, well, I just saw Jason Kidd coach against the Raptors, and he's in his first year, and they threw him a bone by naming him a first-time coach in a big market with future Hall of Fame players. Kidd tried basically a power struggle that failed and tried to go up over the GM Billy King and say, I've only been coaching 1 year, but now I want to run the team as well. I want to be president. I'll keep Billy King, who did try and fire Jason Kidd halfway through the season, but then they worked out their differences. This is incredible, and there's a lot of NBA people incredibly angry as well, Andrew, because they also say it broke the code of you don't go for another guy's coaching job. It's one thing if you're a free agent. It's one thing if someone says, hey, I'm going to fire this coach. Would you be interested if I do? But none of that's taken place here in Milwaukee. It looks really bad on Kidd.
It looks awful, and he deserves any criticism he gets today. I mean, you look at his body of work with the Brooklyn Nets. So he comes into this situation, and anything Kidd wants, Kidd gets. I want Lawrence Frank. Okay, you got him. And 15 minutes into their relationship, he says, I want Lawrence Frank out.
And off the bench.
And buy out his contract, the best-paid assistant in the NBA. Make it go away. So they do. They give him a $200 million payroll. And what happens? They barely made the playoffs. And yes, they did get by the Raptors. And they went out with a whimper in the second round. And now Kidd pulls this coup to try to switch organizations. Ugh.
Well, you wouldn't.
It's disgusting.
And other sports would react the same way. If Robin Ventura came in, was first-year manager for the White Sox, and then he was trying to go over Kenny Williams or Brad Ausmus was doing that this year with Dave Dombrowski, people would be just as outraged in other sports.
People,
for a first-year coach.
People in this town,
Kidd.
People in this town loathe John Farrell, and what he did was way more kosher than what Jason Kidd was doing over the weekend in Brooklyn.
Farrell didn't want to be manager of the Blue Jays, let alone president of the Blue Jays. He didn't want either.
But he wanted to jump markets even with a contract.
So more on this. The negotiation may be a second-round pick. Milwaukee, are they in need of a change? Sure they are. Of course they are. John Hammond's not been very good there as a GM, but Milwaukee needs to do more than just hand Jason Kidd the reins of power.
Nothing like filling your organization with bad people, though. That's never a good idea.
Speaking of, Jeff Blair's in.
It's a great person.
Yes, Jeff Blair's show 9 to 11. Kevin Barker and he will have Baseball Central at 11. The Jays with the night off, and they'll have the night off the next two nights because they'll play day games at home against the Milwaukee Brewers. As disappointing a series result as we've seen to lose three straight to Chicago, although as Andrew pointed, the lineup they're sending up against left-handed pitchers is it's half Blue Jay, half Bison. It's just a bad lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. I've done this before.
Yeah, you have. I've seen
it. I couldn't get too worked bent out of shape about this. You know, they don't have Laurie. They don't have Batista. They're facing left-handed pitchers. I actually thought they might get a split at most. So, no, I'm not. It was a bad weekend, but I think it was thoroughly understandable. They didn't hit. It's that simple.
And no
you
one,
know what happens when you got guys like Darren Mastroianni around? Is
batting second. Yeah.
Batting second. I mean, there's a reason those guys aren't everyday major leaguers. They're not real good.
You got a guy Friday night make his major league debut.
Exactly.
And he's fifth in the Blue Jays. First game, and he's fifth in the Blue Jays order. And it speaks to, I guess we'd call it the mediocrity of the division.
Yes.
Three straight losses to not a very good baseball team. And other than Boston climbing back in the race, no other movement. And Boston's in this thing six games out with a million to play.
The Jays, there's a five-game difference between where the Jays are now and where they were last year after 84 games. Last year, they were 10 games back. And this year, they're, what, 1.5 games up. So, yeah, it is a crap division, which is good. Which is good.
Every team has their kryptonite. The best teams in the bigs have their kryptonite. With the Blue Jays, with these injuries, left-handed pitching is just that. There's nothing. You can criticize the depth, but when your best players are injured, or at least a couple of them are, and your lefties can't hit lefties, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't help when, you know, Eric Kratz is down in Buffalo. What did Eric Kratz do yesterday? I think he got a double.
Four for six.
Yeah, he drove in six runs or something like that. But Eric Kratz can't get a sniff up here because you've got to carry a guy who essentially, you know, is essentially carrying R.A. Dickey's bag. I mean, that's about it. That's about all he's doing.
Jeff Blair has Gord Stelick and 9. Gord Ash, the assistant GM of the stunningly good Milwaukee Brewers, biggest division lead in baseball, belongs to the Brew Crew. And they're here tomorrow afternoon and, of course, Wednesday afternoon. We're on the air tomorrow at 8 a.m. Just a reminder, Canada Day morning. All the latest. We'll follow up this Josh Georges thing for the next 24 hours and then some. Talk to you at 8.